if you see a citizen M room, you know you're in a citizen M room, right? You can't say the same for many of the other big brands because they all start to look alike and they all blur together. And the design is not very distinguished. We know who we're for and we know how to scale this on a global basis.
Hi, y'all. Rob Napoli, host of Hospitable. We are here today at the Citizen M offices in Midtown Manhattan, Garment District, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
Yeah, we call it Nomad.
Nomad. Okay, this is the Nomad. I never, especially that area, it's all kind of like congealed and I don't know. Like down south, got it. Soho, NoHo, like whatever. Nomad always tends to trip me up. Although, couple of hotels that are over here that I've been to, like the bars and stuff, because my wife redid one over in this area, which is super nice. The Nomad over here, she just redid that. So yeah, we're here at Citizen M, excited to be here. Really vibey office. If you ever stayed at a Citizen M hotel, you will, you know the vibe, you know the look and the feel. And today we're sitting down with the Chief Commercial Officer, Ernest Lee. Ernest, thank you so much for hosting us today. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. And so I really, you know, we've been talking about doing this for a while, and then a million and a half things happened in between trying to record, from like travel plans to me being on jury duty to whatever, whatever. So I'm excited we finally get to be here. And I kind of want to start with, I love like the Citizen M mentality. And if you go into Citizen M hotel, it's super vibey. It's got a very eclectic feel. So tell us, you know, what is it about Citizen M? What's the mission? You know, why does it bring this like vibe so much?
Yeah. So number one, I'm proud that you perform your civic duty. Jury duty is a very important responsibility. but with respect to Citizen M, we have a very clear-cut mission, which is we want to provide affordable luxury for the people, which means essentially taking 90% of a luxury experience and offering at 60% of the price. And we want to do that over and over again in the markets that we find best represent our target audience, which are typically young people and young companies. And so for us, that gravitated us towards the big gateway cities, starting in Amsterdam, then to Paris, to London, and here in the US, where we're represented in New York, Boston, all the way to the West Coast, in San Francisco, LA, and Seattle.
Yep.
And what we want to do is we essentially want to provide as much of the right offering as possible for this specific niche. Because what we found over the years, as you study any brands, is the moment that you try to be for everybody, you actually end up being for nobody. And so being very distinct, very disciplined, and very careful in not diluting ourselves and being as much of a complete sort of representation of our original brand for this target audience and not straying too far.
I love that. And if I'm not mistaken, y'all just opened up a new location in Austin recently, right? And Rome, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yep.
I freaking love Rome. Like, I cannot wait to go to Rome and have to check that out. I've checked out Boston, both New York locations. Those are the only two, the only three I've been to so far.
Well, you have a lot to go.
I do. I know our founder, Case, has been to, I think, 12 of them already. And I love the app, the personalized app, like, you know, Welcome Citizen. You have all the things, you can do everything on an app or the iPad in the room. I think that it really hits on the target audience. And I love the mission. And as the Chief Commercial Officer, you've been here for a little while, you've kind of grown into this role. You know, what attracted you to Citizen M, you know, when you started?
Yeah, so I've always been in the hospitality business. And when you're in the hospitality business, especially, you know, most of my career being in the 2000s plus, what you notice is that the business, for a lot of reasons, attracted a lot of sophistication over time. And a lot of, I would say, with sophistication, a lot of dominating financial interests. And what that typically led to was a very fragmented business model, meaning that when I was growing up, what you had was, and still have, is brands on one side, owners on another, and then sometimes developers and third-party management companies, all with separate and sometimes competing interests.
Yeah.
And who typically is left holding the bag are customers and sometimes employees. So what I really liked and attracted to me about CitizenM was the purity in its business model. It's true vertical integration. We design, we develop, we own, we brand, and we operate. And having that complete control over the entire customer experience is something that I felt was very unique and distinguished, and something that really attracted to me, which is somebody that's really oriented towards building very unique customer experiences.
I love that. And so it's kind of funny, right? Customer experience is a hot topic right now. And so when we think about the customer experience, what do you think really stands out when we get into the customer journey from the moment you walk into a hotel? What do you think really stands out about CitizenM that you feel like y'all do better than anybody else?
Well, as I mentioned before, we are a true owner operator. And one thing that the main primary benefit is control. And so the first element that we really focus on is consistency. If you see a CitizenM room, you know you're in a CitizenM room.
Yeah.
Right? You can't say the same for many of the other big brands.
Yeah.
Because they all start to look alike and they all blur together. And the design is not very distinguished. We know who we're for, and we know how to scale this on a global basis. And the same can be said about our public areas as well, where once you enter our doors, sometimes you don't even have to look and open your eyes. You could smell that you're in a CitizenM lobby.
Yeah.
And so having that consistency and that clear differentiation in the marketplace, and for good reason, right? Because yeah. People like it, is something that I think CitizenM really stands apart from other hotels.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I really like the consistency, and you hit the nail on the head. When you walk into a CitizenM, whether you're in the lobby or the room, you know you're in a CitizenM through the artwork, through the smells, the sounds. And I do love that, like, CitizenM is always a great hotel where if you want to grab a beer and vibe, or if you actually want to get work done, like, as someone like you who travels a lot for work, when you go to a hotel and there's not a place to work, you hate working at least I hate working in my hotel room, right? It's like, I need a good lobby to work out of. If you don't, it's like it's the worst experience. So I love that CitizenM does that, and that's such a fun piece to it. And it brings to that table that customer experience. And I also love the app. Like, one of my favorite things is that you can use an iPad and app to control everything. Like, you're just taking my life and making it 10 times easier, which I think is super exciting.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's important to distinguish that we are not a technology company, right? What we do is we try to provide all of these things to enable a better customer experience, because we are an in-person company, right? The main benefit of being a hotel brand and a hotel company is that you're ultimately put in a position where you can make a human connection yeah. with your guest. And all these other things, what we're trying to do is just eliminate one piece of noise or inconvenience that travelers typically experience.
Yeah. And I think that's really important, right? Because, you know, hospitality is H2H, human to human, right? It's very much a human-centric business. And technology is great. And the thesis of this podcast is, how do you make hospitality more human through technology? The idea being, technology plays its role, but it's not the key driver, right? As you said, we're not a technology company, but you have technology to make the human experience of being a citizen that much more effective, more personal. And you feel it. You could feel it in the way you interact. And you can interact as much or as little as you want and still feel taken care of. I think that's really important. So when you think about CitizenM, innovation, the things that you're doing, what fucking excites you about your job every day? What gets you up and gets you going?
Yeah, so it's funny. I just talked about this morning, coincidentally. You know, for me, I feel that, you know, happiness, somebody explained to me once, I think they probably rip it off from somewhere else, but happiness in a personal or professional context, and oftentimes the combined, is when reality minus expectation and whatever that calculus is, right? And for me, like, I feel pretty content with my life. And so there's always that something else, right? In terms of what else might you be doing in order to lift the level of expectation? And especially for me personally, is the desire to build, right? I mentioned before that you know, for me, like, there are motivations in life, whether it's financial rewards or ego or whatever, right? Like, I think everybody has some iteration of that. But for me, there's an innate desire to build, and yeah. CitizenM really allows for that. We not only build literally buildings, it could be a dirty car park one day or a vacant building, and all of a sudden it's a brand new glitzy hotel, or you're building teams, or you're building products from scratch. Yeah. And putting it into existence, something that wasn't there before, is highly motivating and highly energetic.
That's amazing. And I love that you brought up kind of like building something, right? And really cool, because you have a really cool team, right? So you're managing the sales, marketing, and revenue teams or branding teams across the globe. So how do you go about managing a team that sits in different time zones? And what's the most exciting or fulfilling part of having team members around the globe currently?
Yeah, so having a distributed team, I mean, as you know, is not easy, right? I think technology has, in a lot of ways, helped democratize that.
Yeah.
But there's still a lot of struggle in making it work perfectly. And so you try to find the right mix between when you want to get the teams together in person versus do things digitally. But at the end of the day, trying to drive an organization that's not just distributed, but also just volume-wise, right? The number of members in that team, and getting any collective to do something requires a heavy amount of discipline
yeah.
and a heavy amount of simplification. So I think what's the most difficult is getting people to work in one direction.
Yeah.
And that often means that you have to have a very clear vision of where that direction is headed, a very clear framework on the do's and do nots,
yeah,
and then a heavy amount of trust that the teams and the individuals that you hired are able to get that job done.
Yeah.
And oftentimes people will go off course a little bit, and you have to sort of put them back into the framework that you're trying to steer towards.
Yeah.
But ultimately what you want to be is very disciplined in getting the momentum towards that vision, and a little bit more flexible on how you get there.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting, because having a distributed team, I think that everything you said is amazing. And it's something that it's in theory great, but also with a 6-hour time difference and sometimes those different things, it makes it really hard to kind of manage your schedule. So for you, how does your schedule look? Do you get up early to handle stuff in Europe? And like, what does your kind of day-to-day look like? Or how do you kind of manage those different expectations with time zones right now?
Yeah, so most of our teams are still based in the Netherlands. So dealing with a 6-hour time difference for most of the year, except for 4 weeks where daylight savings ruins it.
Yeah.
But my day personally starts very early, where I try to minimize the amount of lost hours between New York and Amsterdam. In addition to that, we try to document as much as possible so that there is some sort of continuation of yeah. the workday, and that way it's not like stop start. And the way that we do that is varied. I mean, it's everything from Slack to email to, you know, shared Google Docs.
Yeah.
But having that a combination of meetings and agenda items that you want to discuss in a synchronized way,
yeah.
Combined with more task-oriented things that you could do asynchronously,
yeah.
is really the only way that we know how to make it work.
Yeah, no, I love that. And that's kind of what we do too, right? I many days start early, except for kind of Tuesday, Thursdays, like my gym mornings, which everyone knows, like from 7 to 8:30, don't book with me. But it's very much cadenced around that. We have our standing meetings. We have a lot of asynchronous task planning and utilizing tools. And I think with the right distribution, there's something about being in a room with somebody to just like drive all those things forward. But if you have the right setup, the distributed team, you could really do a lot of damage and really create good cadences. And I like how you say being disciplined. I think that is something that most humans, we talk about discipline, struggle with, especially when you have a team of sellers, right? Sometimes that could be tough. So it's really cool to see how And I know that was kind of, we bought it over that talking about the difference, culture differences and how we manage teams and what our hours look like. And I think it's really cool though, because there's something rewarding about building abroad, right? Like being here in New York, having small local team, but also a wider distributed team over, you know, for me in the Netherlands. I also have a couple people right now in APAC, which is a unique time zone to work with. We have a number of clients out there, and how you manage that really makes it quite fun. Sometimes, many times very crazy, but for the most part, kind of fun to kind of be able to ebb and flow that and have those kind of conversations, to be honest. It's kind of cool.
Yeah. And I think it sort of stresses the importance of finding colleagues to join you that really are passionate about what they do. Because especially when you enter into like a global time zone, your days get very blurred, right? And you have to be able to mix between inconsistent schedules, work early mornings, maybe stop, take a break in the afternoon,
yeah,
and then pick back up late for a different time zone. But what it does require is not just discipline, but people who have the heart to be able to commit to that type of inconsistency.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you know, people who just want to check the box and clock in, clock out are probably not up for that task.
Yeah. It's very, when you work for a global company and a kind of a maneuverable company, like CitizenM is big, but it's still maneuvering. And it's very, I like to think of CitizenM as vibey, gritty, kind of rebel a little bit. Like it takes a certain type of person to want to work in that space. I mean, I always tell people in Omniboost, you know, when they're looking to come to Omniboost, like it's a bit of a crazy train in a good way, right? Like we're all in the same direction. We're doing a lot of things, but you have to be able to move and shake a little bit. Like if you are looking for step one, do this, step two, do this, step three, do this, and you're done. You know, you got to be creative, solutions oriented, be a problem solver. And also those are the type of people that you want, like that could think outside the box. So very interesting and fun. And as you kind of manage your teams, how do you go about, like, do you struggle at all with, you know, building the team and talent attraction, or how do you go about like evaluating talent and what does it mean to be a citizen?
Yeah. So I'd say that the main characteristic that we look for in anyone that joins our company, whether that means starting at the property or working in our support office, which is our central office, is just a basic human sort of trait of being kind, right? We feel that, yes, you could hire very, very smart people, but the moment that they're an asshole, it messes up everything, right?
Yeah.
Because this, at the end of the day, is a team game, right?
Yeah.
It would be different if we were playing basketball, where you could have a few stars carrying your weight, but this is very much, as can appreciate, this is like American football, man.
Yeah.
This requires certain specialisms, but a lot of coordination and a lot of synchronization. And yeah, in order to do that, there has to be like a level of empathy, trust, and a lot of times that's rooted in just kindness, right? People who are generally caring for other people and care what they do and care to wish how that person can work with themselves. I'd say from a more like intellectual level, something that I personally really look for is because of our size and where we are in our growth. I wouldn't say that we're like a startup anymore.
you're scale up, right?
Yeah, we're. I always say that we're a teenager, right? We're kind of going through like puberty a little bit. We're not a big company.
That's a great example.
Yeah, we're not a big company, but we're not mom and pop. What we're trying to do is get the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
Keep the entrepreneurial and risk tolerant type of mindset, but some of the best practices that the blue chip companies have.
That is a challenge, right? Where you go through, you want to keep what makes you dynamic,
right,
and that little bit of like Wild West shoot from the hip, but also putting in like the bit of process, the big companies, and like that is a tough dynamic of going from like we do everything to like creating process so we can kind of control the chaos a little bit. And that's a really unique part of the company journey that you're going through, it sounds
exactly.
like.
So this is where the curation of the type of people is really important, yeah. right? And for me, some of the one of the biggest things that I look for is, it's hard to describe in one word, but what I sort of call knowing what to do when you don't know what to do, right? People who have like a flexible mental model.
Yeah.
Very inquisitive, typically asking a ton of questions, and they're able to adapt to different environments, right?
Yeah.
They may have subject matter expertise in one area, but you could throw them into something else and they'll figure a way out. And that's typically what's needed when you're going through these growth periods,
yeah.
because oftentimes it's a very volatile world. It's a very volatile working environment. And it, oftentimes ambiguity can be a big challenge towards people who are very one-dimensional.
Yeah. I love how you said it. I love people that know what to do when they don't know what to do, right? That is a skill that is so hard to also figure out. Like until you get, you throw somebody in the situation, you don't find that out. The other thing that I always like to look for is somebody that's not afraid to say, I don't know, let me go figure it out and get back to you. That is one skill that I always try to like tease out of people is like, are you willing to say, I don't know to me and get back to me and then follow up? Because I think it's really easy to, at times, want to bullshit your way through versus like being okay with saying, you know what? And it sounds a great question. I'm going to get back to you because I'm going to go make sure I find the right answer and bring some solutions to the table. So give me 24 hours and then follow up on that. Right. It's also kind of going back to not knowing what to do when you knowing what to do when you don't know what to do, like find a solution, come up with a way to find a next step or whatever. And that's something that I resonate with. And like, it's fun, hard, crazy, exciting, exhausting, all at the same time as you manage that team and go through finding and building.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, Rob, because, you know, what I find related to that of finding people who can have the intellectual honesty to say, hey, like, I don't know how to do this, right? Like, I don't know what to do, is you need a very called psychologically safe environment to do that, yeah. right? I mean, you're running a global team. And the moment that they are non-transparent with you about an issue or performance or a struggle, that's the dangerous part, right? Because you don't have visibility to that.
Yeah.
And you can't help. And yeah. so maintaining a culture where people feel like they can make a mistake.
Yeah.
And be vulnerable enough as a team contributor or as a manager or leader of saying, hey, like, I also don't know, let's figure it out together, yeah. Is a very critical part of running what I see as a high performing team.
Yeah, no, I love that you share that. And it's something that resonates with me heavily. I would rather people make mistakes because they tried something and failed versus make mistakes by not doing, right? Inaction is not acceptable. Like, I'd rather you make a mistake doing some sort of action in figuring it out together. And it's something that resonates very heavily with me as I've grown a global team, right? And going through that. And you have to have a high level of transparency, trust, and open communication for that to happen, which can be hard sometimes with time zone difference and whatever, right? And so making sure to have those good conversations when you can and making sure to be, as you said, kind of emotionally intelligent and transparent with each other, both from a leadership perspective down, but also from the bottom up, which is super cool. Yeah. So y'all opened in Austin, y'all opened in Rome. What's next for 2024? We're hitting Q2. What are some of the big things that you and your team are doing or the companies that SM's doing for Q2 and what are you most excited for?
Yeah, so we're opening up two more hotels this year. So this comes on the heels of a whirlwind end of 23, beginning of 24, where we opened up Rome, a hotel at Menlo Park, and Austin. This summer, we'll be opening up a hotel in South Beach, which will be our third in Miami, and our second in Boston in the Back Bay neighborhood.
Nice.
Yeah. And that one will be our largest hotel in our entire portfolio.
Really?
Yeah. So that one is a big boy. And the teams are very focused on making it successful and opening out of the gate strongly. In addition to that, I'd say an area that we're very focused on right now is making sure that we're leaned in heavily towards the business travel recovery. So business travel continues to lag pre-pandemic levels, yeah. But for a lot of reasons, specifically, you know, the strength and sort of resurgence of corporate performance and corporate earnings, we're seeing a better recovery in 24 and making sure that we're getting our appropriate market share and continue to grow in that area, as well as scaling our membership program. We have a paid membership model that we've grown to about 30,000 members. We really gear towards making a highly valuable experience for our members to make sure that they're not just getting travel benefits, but also social benefits and work benefits. And then ultimately figuring out a way to go from not just a B2C sort of option, but also a B2B offering.
That's exciting. It's a lot of stuff this year. And again, I love that you're coming back to all that. And there's technology enhancing it, but it's coming back to the customer experience, right? Whether you're traveling for business, pleasure, or both, having a consistent customer experience with, I mean, rewards is one of the hugest things, right? Like, you know, we were talking pre-show about flying to the Netherlands back and forth many times as we do, which airline points and whatnot. And, you know, I think for hotels, like for me, very similar. I love my reward points. I love being able to lean into that and utilize that. And also the experience that comes with being a member, having a tier, working to those things, having that social benefits, the work benefits, the travel benefits, the all the things, like those matter, especially when you are traveling, let's be honest, as much as you and I do, yeah. Both for business and pleasure. So it's really cool to hear that you're continuing to commit on the business travel side of things, where I think Citizen M hotels are just meant for that with the way the cafes are set up with the co-working spaces and whatnot. It's such a unique setup that I think opens a lot of doors. So that's cool. So the last thing I want to kind of bring up as we're kind of coming close to time is I've really loved some of the marketing you've been posting and doing. And I know that you've been doing some brand activations with our friend Andrew Young, who is absolutely amazing. But also you've been using a lot of memes lately from the internet to really kind of highlight your mission and your message. And I absolutely love it. Tell me, where did the idea for leveraging kind of these social memes into the Citizen and brand really came about? And talk to me a little bit how it's going for you, because I think it's just absolutely hilarious. Like, I've loved some of the stuff you've been posting on LinkedIn. Little memes absolutely kill me every time.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm just goofing around, just to be honest. But I'd say like B2B marketing on LinkedIn should not be too differentiated from B2C marketing, which is if you look at like the pure foundation of like social media, why does it exist, right? It's escapism, right? It's a form of entertainment. And the moment that people take it too seriously on LinkedIn or whatever is where I'd say is a very noisy space where people tune out. And I think if you apply like some of the best principles from TikTok or Instagram, where you can focus on the entertainment value of a post, then it might, I wouldn't say guarantee, but it might lead to much more engagement and much more attention.
Yeah. And also kind of, in my opinion, makes you resonate with the brand a little bit, right? Like the Citizen and brand, the mentality, being a citizen, being a global citizen, right? And then a little bit of that aesthetic, the vibe, the I like to think of Citizen as a little rebellious in its own way, like the artwork and whatnot. And so like having those memes, I think, really also tie to the brand in a way that makes me feel more connected, not only to you, but the brand itself. So I really like how you do that from an activation standpoint. I agree. I mean, as somebody who was a brand consultant and wrote 2 books on it.
Yeah.
It can get loud.
It definitely requires you not to take yourself too seriously.
That is very true. Very true. Well, I absolutely love it. You know, we work in hospitality, we work in this space, we travel a lot. So what is, I'll let you choose. What is your best travel memory? What is the worst travel memory? You know, travel is so sentient and you remember those things. So I'll let you decide if you want to share your best or your worst travel story.
It's hard to say having like very bad travel memories, because I feel that if you have the opportunity to travel, it's always good, right? You're experiencing something new, even if you're something bad. Yeah. I'd say the best memories for me. I mean, I'm a hotel geek, so I have vivid memories of very distinctive hotel experiences. And for me, one of my favorite hotels that I've stayed at and also just led to a very memorable experience was the Sofitel in Hanoi. Vietnam obviously has like this beautiful blend of, not so nice, but French colonial culture with Asian and Eastern influences. And the Sofitel there just like really represents and resonates on all different levels between its distinct design, its service offering, its food, as well as just the overall vibe and ambiance.
Yeah.
And it was just a very special moment for me to spend, not just with my wife, but also with my parents, and something that like you really cherish.
Yeah.
And then I'd say, bad. I don't know. It's always probably something around food, bad food.
I resonate with that so much. I mean, I love that you shared that story and such a cool story, right? Of, because travel is so special and being able to share it with your wife and your parents and go do that trip and stay in a great hotel and have a great fusion of experiences and cultures is something that I think it's so amazing and it's really easy. And I'm with you. Like when you're traveling, like so much shit can go wrong from like, I've missed, you know, flight connections and gotten delayed. And, you know, at some point you're just like, you know what, like it's not worth getting upset because you're still on this trip and you're still having an experience to the point where it's still frustrating. Usually the things that I always get annoyed about is sometimes like I have anxiety. I like to be places early. So like if things are late, and of course I lived in Italy for 2 years, so worst country to be on time.
Schedules. What schedules?
Exactly. Wait, coffee's at 2. Yeah, it's 3:00. Yeah, I'm on my way in 15 minutes. Okay. Or food. Like those are the two things that usually kind of got me the most, like actual experiences. Like the thing is like you're still somewhere doing something amazing and you have a story from it. And I think that is the most unique kind of fun thing about travel. And it's why I love to do it so much. It's like, I mean, I love telling stories. So give me if it's bad, right? Like you want to hear, okay, funny story for you. So I was in Tunisia, right? In the south part of the Netherlands, stayed at the city hotel. And I had to get picked up to go catch the train to Brussels to jump on my plane. And I was getting picked up at 5:30, right? So I got up at 4:45 to take a shower. And the way it was set up is the shower, the sliding door, and then there's like a back door open. And so I was taking a hot shower. I left the door open into the living room because I had the back door open. Figured just kind of like, yeah, the beautiful, like the wind blowing in the cold, cool morning air with the hot shower felt amazing. Out of fucking nowhere, the fire alarm starts going off. And so I'm like, what? So I was like, dry off really quick, put on my clothes, run downstairs. I'm walking by all these rooms to go like the fire exit out. Mine's the only one that has like a light blinking on it. And only one of the two smoke alarms in my room are going off. And I go downstairs, the guy's like, false alarm. So I went to go check out 20 minutes later. He's like, yeah, sometimes like our fire alarms are different here. And so sometimes if you have a window open and you're running a hot shower, it can set it off. And I was like, so you're telling me I was the one that woke everybody up at 5 a.m. this morning. He was like, well, not saying, but yes. I was like, do not tell anybody. So breakfast usually starts at 6. He had it open at 5:15, so everyone got to come have breakfast early. So it was kind of a win-win. But to anyone in City Hotel in Tunisia a few weeks ago, I'm sorry for waking up at 5 a.m. But that was my bad.
Well, was that a bad travel experience? Because it sounds like a good memory.
It was a fun memory. Like, I love it. And that's why I was kind of sharing, like, you know, it's something that people can get frustrated. It could be annoying. But at the same point, like, it's a good story to tell. And I'll never forget that experience or that kind of moment. And that's what I love so much about travel. And that's where I think when hospitality is done right and you focus on the customer experience, any experience, good or bad, is memorable. And you learn from it. And that's what's so cool about being in hospitality. So I love it. Ernest, where can, if people want to get in touch with you, follow you for more, how do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, you could follow me on LinkedIn. You could shoot me an email. And otherwise, ask Rob for my contact information.
I love it. Well, I will make sure to put your LinkedIn and the Citizen M Hotel links in the show notes. So if you want to connect with them on LinkedIn, please do so. If you want to connect with them, let me know. Ernest, I appreciate you hosting. Thanks for having us in the really cool office here at Nomad. Thanks for sharing the stories. Excited for what y'all have in 2024, and looking forward to getting a few more badges on my Citizen Nmap this year as I travel around. So appreciate you, my guy.
My pleasure.